speaking on this program is Brother Paul Singh.
Marriage. It affects our lives. Every aspect. The home as God would have it. As He designed it. And as He desires it today. I realize that it is something that we need to examine on a regular basis. No doubt in an audience of this size, there are those that whose marriage is in trouble. There's also no doubt those that have marriages that would be best described as paradise. We need to look at this subject on a regular basis to be able to help one another. And while indeed it's going to be our focus to get to Matthew 5, 31, 32 and to emphasize especially keeping the lock in wedlock, I want to back up, so to speak, and to look at the subject in somewhat of a broad view and help us then to focus and zero our thoughts concerning what God desires concerning the longevity of marriage. May I suggest that God instituted the home for the happiness of man. It wasn't man's idea. It isn't our idea that we came up with, oh, this will be a great way for us to be united and propagate the earth. God instituted the home. In fact, if we take a backward glance, we'll be able from the very beginning to see Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And even Jesus Himself in Matthew 19 would refer to from the beginning how it was as God established it. Man had perverted it, changed it, and God tolerated, as it were, some of that allowed. But from the beginning, we can also add to it the idea of the old law. I wish time would allow us to look at that in more detail. It would be significant, no doubt, to see concerning the solemn nature of marriage and how those that indeed violated that solemn vow that they made to their spouse, the consequences that God said they would suffer. God's serious about this matter. But hastening along, we look to the new covenant. The new law, the perfect law of liberty, James chapter 1, we find, and the emphasis concerning the gospel of Jesus Christ, and how that God has spoken, and we can read in Romans 7, Matthew 5, Matthew 19, 1 Corinthians 7, Ephesians 5, and even others, concerning home and marriage, and husbands and wives, and parents and children. It's amazing how much God has said about this matter. And if we'll go to the book of books as our source, we can find the instruction that we need concerning our homes and making them the best that they can be as God desires. But sadly, there's many perversions that have occurred even recently. No doubt we've watched the news with sadness. I look at the USA Today online and some of the most sickening pictures recently coming out of California especially. An 87-year-of-age woman and an 84-year-old woman marrying. Men and men, women and women. The laws of the land now say that's a marriage, that it's legal and acceptable. But God's Word tells us an abomination in His sight. Doesn't matter what man may say and how man may change, redefining the terms. In actuality, though, God designed it, man and woman, from the beginning. And that's how He wants it to be even this very day. And deviating from that. In the same way, there's perversions concerning sexual immorality with those that are not your spouse. In our world today, on Monday morning, frequently, that which takes place is talking about how I scored. I was slept with someone. I was with this individual. You can't believe how great the weekend was. Some of our members tragically talk about having to listen to that. And the sad state of affairs that exist in the lives and in the world of so many people. that it becomes commonplace, accepted, almost expected in their lives. Not as God desires, not as He designed in the very beginning. It is without a doubt a fact. The home as God established it is under attack. It is being redefined, what is called a marriage. And even in some cases, being avoided. Many people today no longer want to even marry. They just live together. We don't have to worry about then if we decide that we want to separate, go through a divorce. No, we're just going to live together, as it were. The truth of the matter is, we need to examine on a regular basis what we're teaching our youth. Especially the young people that are here in this audience tonight. Especially those that assembled at East Hill this morning and again tonight. You see, those that are now at a stage of maybe dating and even in the process of selecting a mate for life. And the last time that Tony or that I at East Hill preached on the subject, they may not have been at that stage. So on a regular cycling basis, one of my elders said several years ago, don't let a 3-month period pass without a whole lesson on the home and marriage and divorce and remarriage. That was wisdom, I believe. Oh, it's not always what we want to hear. Sometimes it tweaks us a good little bit. But especially as it pertains to our young children, boys and girls, they need to hear that God has spoken and that it's not just up to us as to what we do and how we do it. But not just the youth. We need to likewise focus our attention upon us. Those of us that maybe have been Christians for some time, but need to be reminded of what God has said concerning my responsibility as a husband. My wife's responsibility as a wife. Our responsibility as children. God has not left us groping in the dark, but has informed us exactly what He desires of us. It's been said that our marriages are at the center of all human adventure on earth, beginning or from between birth and death. I believe that. But let's plunge into what has God said about it. I want to go back to the Old Testament at the very beginning and read in Malachi chapter 2 and verse 16 where we find concerning what God has said, "For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that He hateth putting away. Therefore take heed to your spirit that you do not treacherously." God hates divorce. Somebody says, "Oh, wait a minute, Paul, surely you can't mean all divorce now, because there are some times that we read in the Bible of an exception, right? Matthew 19, where if your spouses get, you can put them away." That's true. Or there's other circumstances where a spouse may be abusing, physically abusing, and for your own survival, you have to, I understand that. I'm not talking about that. But by and large, when we have a mindset that indeed if he doesn't take out the garbage, if she burns the biscuits, if she doesn't have my shirts ironed, or whatever it may be, I just don't love him anymore. Or we used to have things to talk about, we don't anymore, and I'm just going to go my separate ways. The tragedy, folks. You know, I find that still humorous to even verbalize that. But it's almost that bad in our world. And tragically, there are no exceptions. Children of God, you see, are susceptible too. In my office at East Hill in Pulaski, there's been too many times over the last couple of decades that I've had a couple sitting there with tears flowing down their face. They're in agony. And she's saying, he says, he doesn't want to be married to me anymore. He doesn't love me. God did not design marriage for that reason. Let's explore it further. Matthew 19, let's read all of these verses, verses 3 through 9. You've read them before. I'll try to economize our time, but worthy of the time, no doubt. The Pharisees came to Jesus. They were tempting Him, trying to trap Him into what He was trying to say and get something that they could hold against Him. And they said, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" And Jesus said, "Have ye not read that He which made them at the beginning made them male and female?" Jesus knew that they were familiar with the law, that they had read, and they knew exactly what it was concerning the law. God made them, by the way, notice, male, female. It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. We need to understand that whatever man has now concocted and developed and allows and even legalizes, that is absolutely in the sight of God a perversion. It's not the way God designed it. They said, and he said, for this cause, shall a man leave father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two. They are now one. But listen especially. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. What God links together, it may be belief in baptism, Mark 16. It may be various other things. Here it's a man and woman who are eligible to marry that God joins together, and it's planned by God, desired by God, and intended by God for it to be until death they do part. They say unto him, well, wait a minute. Why did Moses then give a writing of divorcement to put her away? And he said, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered or allowed you to be put away, to put away your wife. But from the beginning, this is what God designed, this is what He wants, and this is how it's to be. Remember in the context of Matthew 5, how that Jesus would various times say, you've heard that hath been said of them of old time, thou shalt, but I say unto you, you've heard that it hath been said, but I say unto you, in verses 27 and 28 preceding, even that which we are using as a text tonight, that same thought is conveyed. But I'm telling you, this is what God desires. And that's what the Lord is saying at this time as well. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. But whoso marrieth her is put away, doth commit adultery. Let's add to that now Matthew 5 again. I know the young man did a good job in reading it, but to keep it ever before our mind's eye, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of a divorcement. But I say unto you, Jesus is defining it, that whoever puts away his wife, except or saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whoso marrieth her, that is divorce, committeth adultery. Question. Can we understand that? Does it take help for us to grasp and comprehend and be able to cipher, as Jethro Bodine just said? We can cipher now. We can put 2 plus 2 plus 2 and we come down to 6. In Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 4, Paul said, when you read, you may understand. Our God is not inept and incapable of being able to write and convey to us His will. He spoke. In Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, God at sundry times and in different ways, different manners, has spoken unto the prophets but hath in these last days, verse 2 says, spoken unto us by His Son. Jesus, last will and testament, that which we can understand, the perfect law, the powerful Word of God, alive and living, Hebrews chapter 4. And He's spoken in such a way concerning this matter that indeed we can understand. It's that we sometimes just don't want to. You know, we talk about our friends in denominationalism and the fact that they struggle at times. They just keep resisting, saying, I just don't see any need of baptism. I mean, why should I? But it isn't a matter of understanding. It's a matter of acceptance. And so it is with this so often. A matter of accepting that whosoever shall put away his wife, except for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. Let's back up from this just a little bit. Maybe add another particular basic fact, a couple of them, that will possibly help us to understand. Not anything new. It's what no doubt you've heard for all of your life. There are some who are eligible to marry. The key word there is eligible. In other words, those who are candidates are, in the sight of God, able, if they choose to do so, to marry. That automatically suggests that there are some that are not. But there are some who are. And thus, logically, especially to our young ones or those that are unmarried, it's a good question to ask, who are those? According to the Bible, not according to popular opinion, not according to the laws of the land, but what has God said about the matter? And who actually are eligible? Three categories. Those who have never married. Unmarried. Never have married. They're eligible to marry if they choose to do so. Those whose spouse has died, no longer married, according to Romans 7. They're unmarried, their spouse has died. They, if they choose to remarry or marry at that time, can do so. The third category would be that of those who have put away their spouse because their spouse was unfaithful, sexually immoral, having committed fornication. And for that reason, they have been put away. Not because I don't want to live with her anymore, I want to get rid of her, I'll divorce her, and maybe she'll have an affair later on. That's not what Matthew 19 says. But rather having been put away for that reason. These three categories. But now let's look at the fact that there's others that are not eligible. In the sight of God, as tragic as this may be, as hurtful, as incomprehensible, our minds may not be able to get there. You mean to tell me that God doesn't want me to be? Yes, God wants us to be happy. But we're also told that the way of the transgressor is hard. Proverbs chapter 14. There are things or conditions that we may get ourselves into that causes us, our lives, to have consequences for a lengthy time. I've had two families from East Hill over the last 3 years to come to me, one of them, to go to the elders, the other of them, and admitted that they're living in adultery. Absolutely tears flowing like a river, but they both separate and apart from each other. Didn't know the other was doing it. Said almost the same words. I want to go to heaven so bad, even if it means me living alone, that's what we'll do. Some are not eligible to marry. Who? Anyone and everyone that's not included in the other, the previous listing. If I cannot say I haven't been married, I'm thus eligible, or my spouse has died, thus I'm eligible, or I put away my spouse for that reason, and thus I'm eligible. Then I'm not eligible. If you're in a state or condition, truly that causes us to say God has spoken. It's not Paul or Tony. It's not a consensus of the popularity of the majority. It's not the world or any other one that determines this is what it's going to be. Now we can modify it a little bit later on if we choose to do none of that. It doesn't matter what my opinion is. Yours as well. It matters only what God has said. And God has spoken. Now from that, let's springboard into the idea of what marriage is. And that will lead us very conclusively to that which is the purpose of our study. Marriage, to us, what is it to you and your spouse? Somebody has said, well, we're just coexisting. I mean, we're there, hardly know each other. I mean, we fall down. Others say, well, it's just toleration. And yet others say it's the warmest, sweetest, most loving relationship two people can have. You're probably maybe between some of these. Maybe you're the latter. I hope that it is. Let's define it. What is marriage? Marriage is a divine institution. That means, as we said earlier, God established it. And thus God has for the well-being of man. It wasn't good for man to be alone. He created a helpmeet for him, an ideal companionship and the propagation of the earth. God developed that, a divine institution. But we notice also it's a supreme relationship. There's no other relationship. We may have friends on the job. We may have next door neighbors. We may have others that we feel very close to. But none of that is to be at the level of a husband and wife who have joined themselves together, no longer two. That supreme relationship based upon the promises that was made, I will love you in sickness or health, adversity or prosperity, no matter come what may, you're going to be first, number one in my life. You've committed that to each other. I'll leave father and mother. I'll cleave unto you. And it takes precedence over all relationships. Oh, what a supreme relationship. Marriage, it's a relationship of oneness. As we referred in Ephesians 5, as well as various other places, the two become one. I'm not talking about miraculously, and there's still two beings. As there are three beings in the Godhead, yet one. So now we are no longer two, but one. And that one relationship, as it pertains to a mutual self-giving concerning possessions that we have, sharing, even and most of all, spiritual interests that are the most important in our lives. Oneness. A relationship of oneness. Marriage, it is to be for life. Young people, I cannot tell you anything more important tonight than when you select a mate, when you're dating and planning, when you've finally selected that Mr. Right or that Mrs. Right, whichever the case, look at it through the eyes of what God desires, and that is to be not just until we fall out of love, not until maybe some difficulties, not until I lose my job, not until others come and look a little bit prettier or more handsome, but for life. God has spoken in Matthew 5, Romans chapter 7, Malachi 2, as we referred earlier. God does not want the putting away, but He has the design and the desire of mankind to keep that commitment. It's not a contract like you sign your name saying, I'll make this payment on such and such date in this amount, but it's a contract nevertheless. And we need to understand that that contract or vow that we have made is to be kept. And in the same way that we spoke a moment ago concerning giving and possessions and interest, it is to be for life that such is taking place. A few days ago, LaDon and I and some of the other family members were in Franklin. One of our members of the family, David's family to be specific, was marrying his grandson, Tyler. Tyler and Adrian had one, I believe, of the most beautiful weddings I've ever attended. It was outside. The trellis work, the beautiful scenery, the pasture land in front of us, the music that was playing, the songs that were sung, everything was immaculate. You could tell that they had prepared just phenomenally. And then the climactic moment when we saw coming down the rolling hills in the distance, this white chariot pulled by this black stallion. And there was Adrian and her father. And brought her literally through the pasture land up to the back of all of the 300 that was there approximately. And that bride prepared for her groom got out. But even as we attended that wedding of great interest, I know that the two of them have prepared for the longevity, for the commitment, the contract. But you know, I'm afraid that in a lot of marriages, that's not the case. So much emphasis given to the beautiful wedding and not necessarily the urgency of keeping the lock in the wedlock. Not just planning and going through and enjoying and phenomenally wowed at this gorgeous day. But what about when she wakes up and her hair is not all beautiful and his breath is so stout that he'd kill a horse, and they turn to each other And she may think, what have I got myself into? I'm trivializing a little bit, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you? See, it's not all fanciful now. It's not all that beautiful wedding. I mean, Cinderella is no longer. And yet, they're in love. And the keeping of that lock, the vow, throwing away the key, no longer to open it. That's what God desires. I pledge my love to thee and thee alone, to love and honor and cherish all of the things that we said, till death we do part. But if we stop to think about the fact that it's not just a man and a woman, but there's a triangle here. It is between man and woman and God. Jesus said in Matthew 19, what therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. It isn't just me committing to my wife. We just recently celebrated our 44th. She's had 30 some odd years of very happy marriage. Did y'all get that? I'm just joking. I say that she's had 44, but she might tell you a different story. But you know, 44 precious years of a commitment that were not all easy. Some tough times. The death of a child. A house burning. Changing jobs. Miscarriage. Some times that we shed tears. And we maybe were not even the best friends at that point. There were times that she had every reason not to like me, but she loved me. And the commitment was made in the presence of God, in the presence of witnesses, for a lifelong commitment. In Romans chapter 7, bound by the law to her husband, so long as he liveth. I loved and appreciated so much Brother Thomas B. Warren. He made a statement, the statement that you're reading now, that divorce is almost unknown in marriages where both partners are faithful Christians. He looked at that, critiqued it. He says, you know, that's not right. Divorce is unknown in marriages where both are faithful Christians. Faithful children of God that indeed have joined themselves together, no longer two, now one, honoring that commitment and vow that has been made in the presence of God, that God is united together, and realize that they're will be times that are mountaintops. There will be times when the marriage is on the rocks, but you keep on trudging. You realize that there may be some fractures. There may be even times of crumbling, but we're going to survive. We're going to piece the pieces back together. I said things I shouldn't. You did things you shouldn't. But we can forgive, as indeed we need forgiveness. And keep on keeping on. What God wants. And we can grow and enjoy to the point that our marriage becomes paradise. I thought I loved that precious little 95 pounder when I married her in 64, but I didn't. It probably was nothing more than puppy love. Oh, after a year or two, I thought I loved her. But I really didn't. After 10 or 15 years, oh, I knew I loved her then. But I probably didn't. And how wonderful it is to still be growing in that love. When I'm away from her, it's like a major part is missing. She completes my life. I help meet. And I pray to God that I am the same to her in this marriage. The combination is difficult at times. We could talk about wives and husbands and how About the time you get it all figured out, things change. I've got a book in my library at home right now. The outside it says, Everything You Need to Know About a Wife. Open up, it's blank pages. I mean, it's going to change. And yet we grow and we reach and we continue to accumulate and grow together to accomplish that combination that will make that home as God would have it. Why? To get to heaven. You see, in order to get to heaven, I need to get right. I've got to be in the right place in the family of God. I've got to be a child of God. I've got to live as a child of God. I've got to stay right as a child of God. And then ultimately, I can die right as a child of God. And my wife helps me, and I strive to help her. That we can be, not in the flesh, not married and giving in marriage. I believe the Bible teaches recognition and individuality as far as even in the life after this sojourn, and to realize that we can be together even though spirit changed beings forever in the presence of God. How marvelous it is to understand and to realize that that is how we can be. I want to ask you, how are you spiritually? Are you in Jesus Christ or are you out of Christ? Are you saved or are you lost? And there's only two options. When we talk about the home, Matthew 5, Matthew 19, Romans chapter 7, God has spoken. And He has told us this is what He desires. But He's also spoken concerning the idea of come unto me and I'll give you rest. There's a prepared mansion that I've gone and it's waiting you. And one day I'll say, enter in. It's awaiting the home of the soul with all the redeemed of all ages. And I want LaDon and Paul to be a part and to enjoy that. Because we've helped each other. We've gone on toward perfection, Hebrews 6. Pressing toward the mark of the prize, Philippians 3. Growing in faith and in knowledge, temperance, patience, 2 Peter chapter 1. Adding to our faith and developing as a Christian toward glory. If you're not a Christian tonight, may we assist you. If you're an erring child of God, may we assist you in helping to be right in His sight to prepare for that mansion that awaits us. If we can assist in any way, make your way to the front. Tony, one of the elders, will be glad to assist in any way. We will rejoice with you as even the angels in heaven rejoice upon your being spiritually as God desires. Won't you come?